You are listening to Long Innings, brought to you by Cricket Next.
This is Long Innings, brought to you by Cricket Next, and you're with me, Supriya.
Two wise men. On this Long Innings episode, we take a look at umpiring in cricket.
Umpiring in cricket is a thankless job. If you are noticed at your job only when you make a mistake, it means you have it tough. And so it's true for cricket umpires. It's an arduous task as well, to stand on a cricket field for up to 5 days and concentrate hard for 6 to 7 hours at a time, no matter how hot, humid, cold, windy, etc. the conditions. And when you do make a mistake at times, to be scrutinized and judged by anyone and everyone is not a good feeling. It's not entirely clear when umpiring did start in cricket. While cricket started in the late 16th, early 17th century, in the early days, the man who did the scoring was a notcher, who stood near the action with a stick in hand and cut a notch each time a run was scored on the stick. It was this notcher too who was thought to have been made in charge of handling any disputes that arose. With time, cricket matches started being played for a pot of money or some such prize. It was then that each team of players nominated a person from their team to make a ruling on the game. Thus, each team had a representative to keep things fair. So began the journey of an umpire in cricket. Thus, it was immediately evident that to be an umpire, you had to be someone who was regarded to be fair, had a good knowledge of the rules of the game. To this day, the umpires are the custodian of the game on the field and are expected to know all the latest changes to the rules. A matter of neutrality. This biggest question that dogged the umpires was the question of being fair. One's idea of an ideal umpire could be the two guys playing the role of umpires in the movie Lagaan. They were totally unbiased in their approach and the stakes of the match had no bearing on their ruling, even though they belonged to one section of the two types of people who played that match. Over the years, people have questioned this fairness or neutrality of the home umpires during a series between two countries. This criticism was often levied against umpires from the subcontinent. It was erroneously said that Miandad and Gavaskar were never given out LBW playing at home. In fact, Gavaskar was given out LBW more times at home than abroad. There were enough instances of players questioning the decisions of home umpires, favouring their team in other countries like New Zealand and Australia too. Umpires, like anyone else, sometimes got it wrong, and if that error was such that it resulted in the benefit going to the home team, the questions over neutrality never went away. One of the low points of the game was during the England vs Pakistan match in Faisalabad in 1987, when the England captain at the time, Mike Gatting, got into a heated argument on the field with one of the umpires over a ruling, and the matter escalated to the point that the next day, the umpire in question, Shakur Rana, did not take the field, demanding a written apology from Gatting. No doubt, the perceived dodgy decisions against his team in the series could have been one of the reasons for Gatting to flare up. It was Imran Khan in 1986, fed up with all the questions of Pakistan umpires favouring Pakistan team, who first invited two Indian umpires, V.K. Ramaswamy and Pillu Reporter, to officiate in Pakistan for a test match against the West Indies. He repeated this invitation, this time to two English umpires, before the series against India in 1989. Neutral umpires. By definition, an umpire is supposed to be neutral. The word itself is derived from the French word non-pair, meaning not a member, that is, not a member of either team, that is, impartial. But it was Imran Khan's experimentation that got the ICC thinking of instituting a neutral umpire in test matches, one who did not belong to either of the sides involved. And so it was, from 1992, on an experimental basis, test matches were played with one umpire of the home country and another neutral. From 1994 onwards, this was mandated and one neutral umpire stood in all tests. Episodes like Sachin Tendulkar vs Daryl Harper a la Shouldergate ensured that from 2002 onwards, both on-field umpires in a test match were neutral umpires. This neutrality did make a difference, and a study involving 1,000 tests played between 1986 and 2012 showed that with two home umpires, the visiting team suffered 16% more LBWs. With one neutral umpire, this percentage reduced to 10%, and with both neutral, the difference was negligible. However, after neutral umpires coming into the picture, home sides have a one-loss ratio of 1.57 to 1 opposed to 1.43 to 1 before, so a win-win for all. The law enforcer. Many a times, cricketers are shown to not know a particular law or ruling during the heat of the game. Mistakes, big or small, are quickly forgiven, like, oh, the bails were already off, so he had to dislodge the stumps to effect a run out, which he failed to do. Or, while his bat is over the line, it is not grounded, so he is run out. An umpire will never get away with it. They must know all the laws in play. It's the umpire at the bowler's end who makes ruling on catches taken, popping crease, no balls, wides, dead balls, signal to the scorers for runs and extras and run outs. In modern times, this umpire also indicates whether it's a free hit, when the power plays are on, etc. The other on-field umpire who stands at square leg usually adjudicates stumpings, waist-high no balls, over-the-shoulder wides, etc. The umpires have also sometimes been criticized for following the law too strictly at times, notably when the fuss over bringing the players back on the field after a rain delay or taking them off in the first place. They are criticized for not using common sense, as if they should totally disregard condition of the wet outfield and ground condition and thus player safety just to give the crowd a game. Or when they go off for bad lights, they cop the criticism at times, whereas all they are doing is following the law as laid down by the ICC. Two biggest examples of umpires getting flak for following the law were when in 2006, Daryl Hare awarded a test match to England as fortified by Pakistan when the Pakistani players refused to take the field due to ball tampering allegations. When the 2007 World Cup final was played in virtual darkness just to complete the game on the same day after a rain delay and umpires stopping the play due to bad lights in the second innings. Umpires also have a third umpire to adjudicate in technology-assisted decisions and also a fourth umpire who serves as a backup for the on-field umpires in the way a 12th man supports the 11 on the field. The technological help. It was from the early 90s, November 1992, that technology started having a direct impact on the game. The first usage of technology was for using television replays to adjudicate runouts and stumpings and no-balls, both front-foot no-balls and waist-high no-balls. Third umpires sometimes were also called in to adjudicate if a catch was clean. The improvement in technology brought about the advent of the decision review system, and it was a big step up in helping the umpires ascertain the right decision virtually under all circumstances. It allowed the teams to review an umpiring decision if they felt it was incorrect. With the assistance of ball tracking, real-time snickometer and the hotspot, a third umpire can adjudicate LBWs and caught behind decisions with almost 100% success rate. Some feared that the use of technology would make the umpires over-reliant on the technology or very unsure of their decision-making and would give players a reason to question on-field umpires often. None of that has actually happened. Over time, the correctness of umpiring decisions has gone up from 93% to over 97% after use of DRS started happening. The Elite Panel. The best umpires in the world officiate in the test matches and the big games in ODI and T20 tournaments. These are called the Elite Panel of Umpires, and this panel has been in place since 2002. Currently, there are 12 umpires on this panel. They have a very heavy workload and unfortunately get to officiate very little in their home country. These are also the best paid umpires in the world and can earn between $100,000 to $120,000 US dollars in a year, adding the annual contract and per match amount they earn. It's not much compared to what the top cricketers earn, but that's the way it is. Under them lies the International Panel of Umpires, which forms the next rung of umpires. Some of the best. There have been some wonderful personalities who have been umpires who also were very good at their job. Dickie Bird. He officiated in his first test match in 1973 and would officiate in 65 more tests, his final one being in 1996 when he was given a guard of honour by players from both teams involved. He seldom gave LBWs, so it was often said that if Bird gave it LBW, then it surely must be. He still holds the record for officiating in the most test matches in a single country. He also officiated in 3 World Cup finals, the first 3 of them, and won the respect of the players using his sense of humour. There is one incident when Dickie Bird called a stop to the proceedings because in his own words, and I quote, "I am very sorry, gentlemen, but nature calls," unquote, and he rushed towards the dressing rooms. David Shepherd. He too stood in 3 World Cup finals of 96, 99 and 2003 and in 92 test matches. His round figure made him popular with players, coaches and spectators alike. He had a quirk of hopping every time the scores reached Nelson or 1-1-1, and his doing so was always shown on the TV whenever the opportunity presented. He could also be very firm when it was required, as was evident when he removed Waqar Yunus from the attack for bowling a second beamer in a match against Australia in the 2003 World Cup after warning him after he delivered the first one. He was the first umpire to do it during an international match. Simon Toffle. He was one of the youngest international umpires on the elite panel and won the award for ICC Umpire of the Year for 5 consecutive years between 2004 and 2008. While his career was cut short by a back injury, he had no intentions to becoming an umpire, but went with a friend for an umpiring course, and the rest was history. He totally enjoyed it. Being a young umpire, it really helped him as the players found him of a similar age and thus very approachable. He umpired in 74 tests and won 74 ODIs, including the 2011 World Cup final. He retired from international umpiring at the age of 41. To provide some context, Shepherd officiated his first test at the age of 44. Rudy Curzon. He umpired in 108 tests and 209 ODIs. He used to raise his index finger very slowly whenever he gave a player out. He is the only umpire to officiate over 200 ODIs and 100 tests thus far. He retired from umpiring in 2010. Aleem Dar, still on the panel and regarded as one of the best umpires currently, and was voted as best umpire in the world for 3 years consecutively between 2009 and 2011, he has officiated in 125 tests and has notched up 197 ODIs by March 2019, and thus is on his way to join Curzon. He has officiated in the 2007 and 2011 World Cup finals. He proved his accuracy as an umpire when during the 2011 World Cup, all reviews against his decisions were struck down. Steve Buckner. While the Indians don't recall him fondly due to the 2007-2008 series Sydney Test, he was one of the best and officiated in 128 tests and 181 ODIs, including 5 consecutive World Cup finals from 1992 to 2007. He was known for taking his time before making his decision, and this slow process was the reason he was nicknamed Slow Death. He was awarded the Order of Jamaica in 2007 for outstanding service to sport. Currently, umpires like Richard Kettlebrough, Ian Gould, Marais Erasmus are noted as some of the top umpires of the world and serve on the elite panel.
This podcast was brought to you by Cricket Next. Thanks for tuning in.